Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Donald Trump is taking advantage of Hillary Clinton's absence while she continues to recover from pneumonia. At an event outside Philadelphia yesterday, the Republican candidate revealed plans for paid maternity leave and child care tax credits. It's his latest effort to earn more support from women, with whom polls show he does worse than Clinton. In the swing states, the polls have been mixed. A Bloomberg poll just out of Ohio finds Trump up by 5 points, while a CBS News YouGov poll from a few days ago has Clinton up by 7 in that state. The Washington Post looked at each of the 50 states, and in Texas, which is a very red state, it found Clinton leading Trump 46-45. An Emerson College poll had Clinton up by just 3 points in Rhode Island, which is a state that is overwhelmingly blue. The last time it voted Republican was in 1984. So how should we be reading all of these polls if we really want to know who the next president will be? Matthew Dickinson is a professor of political science at Middlebury College in Vermont. He's been looking into this. Matt, welcome.
Glad to be with you.
And how do we make sense of these polls? Because there are some swing states where the polls seem to make sense and the candidate who you would think would be leading in those places is leading. But then there are others like the ones we just mentioned from Texas and Rhode Island. Nobody expects those to be in play. But if you look at that poll, it's just as close as Florida or Ohio.
Right. So one of the things that I think a lot of listeners underestimate is that even in a perfectly well-done poll, you're going to have tremendous statistical variation from poll to poll. And that's just simply a fact associated with that we're taking a sample from a population. So if you dip back into that population many different times, you're going to come up with slightly different measures. So a lot of what you're seeing here is just random fluctuations due to the process of sampling. Now, the other things that can affect it are man-made errors, and that has to do with how the poll is conducted, whether you offer third-party candidates, what your sample population is. Is it registered voters or likely voters? And that explains a lot of the variation you're seeing in these state polls as well.
And what about when we hear about pollsters weighting the polls? In other words, taking their numbers and saying, okay, we expect the amount of whites without a college degree to be 40% of the population that's going to go and vote, and so we're going to adjust our numbers accordingly.
So it's important to wait for this reason. When you take a random cross-section, and by random, we have a very formal term. It basically means everyone in a selected population has an equal number, an equal likelihood of being surveyed. When you take that random sample and then you want to generalize to subsamples, it's often less accurate because you're having fewer members of those subgroups. And so what a lot of good pollsters will do, well, they'll essentially put their finger on the scale a little bit by ensuring that those subsamples are represented in our survey in about equal proportions to what they see in the population at large. And that way we can be sure when we start talking about these subgroups, we're more likely to have a survey that accurately reflects what those subgroups believe.
But do pollsters ever weight things in a way that you look at it and say, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense, why they would give that group so much sway?
Yes. I mean, part of the debates that you often hear is whether we should weight by party or not. We know partisan identification is a huge influence on voting. Some pollsters will weight by party. They'll say, I'm going to make sure I have 40% independents, 35% Democrats, and whatever the percentage of Republicans is. And others will say, no, I'm going to let the survey response dictate what the partisan composition of my poll will be. In other words, I will not weight the scale by party. Now, most weight by demographics, but many do not weight by party. They just let the chips fall where they may. And the reason is because demographics are not malleable, but partisan identification is. Partisan identification can change very much depending on when you take a poll and which candidate seems to be doing better. That can dictate whether a proportion of the electorate says I'm independent or I'm a partisan person. So I get a little worried when I see pollsters start putting their finger by weighting by party.
What about the difference between a registered voter and a likely voter? Which ones do you look at when you're looking at polls?
So this is a crucial question. Typically, in the end, likely voter surveys are more accurate predictors of the final vote. The problem is it requires you to make estimates about who a likely voter is, and different polling organizations have different ways of doing this. Typically, you ask a series of questions. Did you vote in 2012? Do you know who's running? Do you know where your polling place is? And based on that, you make an estimate of who a likely voter is. Now, when you move from registered voters to likely voters, you're more likely to shift in recent elections your results in a Republican direction. And that's because likely voters tend to be a little wealthier, a little better educated than registered voters. And so you're dropping off some of those lower income, lower educated voters who vote Democrat. So the key here, compare apples to apples. If you're looking at trends over time, don't compare a registered poll taken at time Z to one taken a week later that's only likely voters. As long as you do that, you're fine. But there are errors that have been made in the past. Gallup in 2012, their likely voter model, overestimated the number of white voters that was going to vote, underestimated non-whites. And as a result, their final projections were slightly more optimistic for Mitt Romney in their likely voter model than it was in their registered voter.
What's the gold standard poll in your view?
So here's something that I would recommend that all listeners do. Don't rely on any single poll. Any poll is a snapshot and it's subject to both the problems with man-made wording that we talked about and sampling errors. And the way you want to get around that, look at polls in the aggregate. So do something like the Real Clear Politics polling average or the Huffington Post aggregate. That way, the tendency is for polling errors to cancel out and you get a more reliable assessment of the landscape, the political landscape, by relying on polling averages. Having said that, you know, the gold standard ones are – I wouldn't pick out any one in particular because, you know, in any given election cycle, depending on the assumptions they're making about likely voter models, they could just have a bad election cycle like Gallup, which is a very reputable polling thing. But the major media surveys are good. The major academic surveys generally are good. The ones you want to worry about are sort of the fly-by-night ones that you haven't heard of that suddenly come up with an automated poll that has a result that doesn't fit with your instincts about what's happening in this race. It has one candidate way ahead or way behind. Those are the ones you want to worry about.
How well has the polling community kept up with technology and the fact that people have changed from landline phones to cell phones?
It's been a problem. They've had to adjust. It requires a certain skill in figuring out what mix of landlines and cell phones to have. And it's further complicated. A lot of pollsters have gone to automated online surveys. And that means to respond to the survey, you have to opt in. And that, you know, it offers opportunities for mischief because the people who opt in may not be representative. And that's where you really have to be careful about your weighting. So they're struggling. The polling industry as a whole is struggling to keep up with technology to make use of it. And the most important thing for them is to be transparent on the assumptions that they're making about their polls. And that's my biggest worry. Not all polling organizations are equally transparent about these decisions they're making.
And one other question I have about the polls that we're seeing is some of them are just between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, and some of them include the third-party candidates, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party, and Jill Stein and the Green Party. Now, we know that Gary Johnson is going to be on the ballot this fall. Jill Stein will be in some states. But which poll should we be looking at, the one with just two candidates or the one with four?
So there is no a priori reason to say one is better than the other. It all depends on whether you think these third-party candidates are viable players in the election. Now, we know in years past, at this time in the election cycle, third-party candidates tend to poll better than they actually do in the final results. And that's the reason why you find a lot of major pollsters not including these third-party candidates, because they think their support is going to dissipate. On the other hand, there's reason to think in this election cycle, third-party candidates are going to play a little bit more influential role. First, both our major party candidates have incredibly high unfavorables. So the question comes down to, do you think these third party candidates are credible to the sense that they're going to detract from support for the major party candidates? If you do, keep them in there. But here's the key. If they're not in there, you still have to include a don't know option. You have to give voter respondents, an alternative to voting, saying they're going to vote for one of the two major candidates, even if you don't include a third party candidate. If you do that, then these polls are roughly comparable.
That's Matt Dickinson, a professor of political science at Middlebury College in Vermont. Matt, thanks.
It was my pleasure.
And by the way, the Real Clear Politics average of the major national polls has Clinton up today by 2 percentage points nationally in a two-person race. She's up by 1.8 percentage points in the four-person race. That's down from a 7-point lead just about a month ago.